My interest in this subject started after when my father, Zichrono Livracha, moved from North Hendon to Golders Green, and he came to the Sadi Gerish Stiebel, and it was on the 24th of December, which is today's date, and that evening there was no shear. So he asked the Rav, why is there no shear? And the Rav said, Nittel.
Nittel?
Yeah, Nittel, the birthday of Oso Ha'ish. So my father said, tonight? But Pope Gregory changed the calendar by 11 or so days. The correct date isn't the 25th of December, it's the 6th of January. So Rav said, oh yes, in that case we'll stop learning then as well. So there is an established minhag, mainly amongst Hasidic communities, but it was very prevalent amongst followers of the Chasam Sofer, not to learn on this evening, this night, between Nacht, some say Shkia, and midnight. But from midnight onwards, one would start learning again. And we're going to try and look at this custom to understand it, whether there's any rationale behind it, what's the source for it, and to try and appreciate certain concepts relating to it. One of the earliest references to the subject of Nittel is in the Trumas HaDeshen, Simon Kuf Tzadi Hei, which asks a question about giving of presents to Gentile members. But there is a conspicuous absence of discussion about this subject amongst the Rishonim, and subsequent writers say that the reason for this is because of the Christian censors. The Christian censors held no bounds in holding back from crossing out anything which they felt might be offensive towards their religion. Another early reference is to the Chavos Yoi, the Makor Chayim, who says specifically in Siman Kuf Nun Hei, Minhag Bittel Halimud Beleil Chuga Peloni. There is an established custom not to learn on this evening of their festival. Now, before you phone up your chavrusas and cancel tonight's learning, let's just look at a few aspects of this, because it might just be business as usual, and in fact for many Litvish yeshivas it always has been business as usual. It's an ordinary day, just get on with your normal program and don't pay any attention to what these other people are doing. But it's important for us to understand how such a widespread custom could come about when, you know, it says, V'hagisa bo yomon v'loilo, you should learn by day and by night, which means that the only time when you don't have to learn is when it's neither day nor night. And Torah is what makes the world go round. The world can't survive without Torah, so how could such a custom come about? Indeed, nowhere else in Jewish practice is there such a thing as stopping to learn. The nearest example to that is Tisha B'Av. On the 9th of Av, there is a halacha that you don't learn Torah. Why? Because Pekudei Hashem Yishorim Asam Chelev, it makes the heart happy, and it's a sad day, it's a day of Avelus, and then we refrain from learning, but you still learn other things on Tisha B'Av. You can still learn the dinim of Tisha B'Av. You can still learn about the dinim of Avelus, of mourning. There are parts of Yirmiyah we learn. You can learn Perek HaNizokin, the fifth Perek of Gittin, and so on and so forth. Matters which appertain to the sadness of the day, we learn. But here we have a custom where we don't learn anything at all. So what is the source for such a custom? And how could it come about? Now, there are those who say that this is really the time of the winter solstice. About the 23rd, 24th, 25th of December is the time, just like you have a spring, summer, and autumn solstice, is the winter solstice. And there's something which the Kabbalists say, that at the time of the solstices, we have to be more careful about the way we behave, because there are times of judgment. It is written already in a Gemara Avodah Zorah that there was a pagan festival which took place at about this time. And it goes back to as far as Adam HaRishon, because Adam HaRishon was kicked out of Gan Eden. He saw the days were getting shorter and shorter and shorter, and he thought, oy vey, the lights are going out. The world is being destroyed. And then suddenly he realized the days are going to get longer again. This is about the time when the days become longer, and so a festival came about as a result of the days becoming longer, that the world was not coming to an end. But this is a pagan festival. There is no Jewish source for it. So what is the reason for this custom? My father had it handed down to him that there is the reason for this custom is not to help the soul, the neshama of Osoish, of that man. That we didn't want to do anything to help the soul of a rebel. Yeah. Chazal perceived Yishu, as what his name was, called by them and by the Gemara, as a threat and as a rebel, like a reform movement. Such a big reform movement that it was in fact the biggest confidence trick ever for Christianity to be founded. After all, does it not say in the Pasuk in the Sedra of Ra'eh, Ki yakum bekir b'chol novi ocholim chalom? If somebody comes amongst you, claims to be a prophet or someone who's had a dream, and even does signs and wonders, he even does miracles before you, and these signs and wonders which he predicted come about, let us now go and worship other gods. You may not listen to him. So there it's written, black on white, in the parasha of Devarim Yud Gimel, chapter 13, that you don't listen to any newcomer who comes along and starts doing miracles and starts telling you other messages, and that the Old Testament is replaced by the New, and so on. We won't go into all the Megillus and theses, and there are plenty written about it, to show how many inconsistencies and mistranslations there are in the Christian faith, which base themselves upon us, the Jewish faith. The main reason is given by the Sefer HaParades, who says that it was a danger to go out on that evening. To go to the Beis HaMedrash to learn was Sakonas Nefoshos. In those days, people who were walking in the streets were subject to Christian gangs who were going against the Jews, claiming that they were the killers of their so-called God. And because of the Sakona and the pogroms which took place, the rabbis were saying to people, look, don't go to the Beis HaMedrash. It's dangerous for you. There were processions which took place, and they still are in fact, which take place throughout the continent, where they would walk along with a big cross, and that people in those days were told that they had to bow or kiss it or be killed. So that was a mamash sakonas nefoshos. And still nowadays, once I spent the winter holidays in Basel in Switzerland, where my wife comes from, and at 4 o'clock in the morning, I get woken up by singing going on outside in the street. They're walking along in the street to church, and they're singing carols, 4 o'clock in the morning. I felt like opening the window and calling down to them, excuse me, do you know what time it is? But this is what they do. And they used to do this in a threatening way, and we were under big danger. The Kodman Asano writes in a manuscript which is in the hands of Benite Gabriel that we treat the day like Tisha B'Av. It's a sad day of the Jewish calendar. And on Tisha B'Av we have this rule about not learning Torah. Ah, you could say what we said earlier, but you are allowed to learn certain things on Tisha B'Av. The Chasam Sofer asks this. The Chasam Sofer is very puzzled that the Kodman Asano should make that claim that it's a day like Tisha B'Av. So the Chasam Sofer says something completely different. He says that there are many Christians who go to church at midnight mass, on that night, and it's a kitrug, it's an accusation that the Satan makes against us, that we're all sleeping, and they are davening in their church. That's not very nice, that the Jewish people, the chosen people, who are supposed to be learning Torah by day and by night, are sleeping while they are davening. So the Chasam Sofer says, the reason why we've got this custom of not learning on Xmas Eve is because we want to encourage people to learn at the same time that they are in church. But you can't make a declaration. It wouldn't look nice. You can't say to people, listen, go and learn just to make sure it's at the same time as them. It might look, number one, as though we're copying them, which shouldn't happen. And number two, you know, it might look as though we're forcing ourselves to be in competition, which can create animosity. So the rabbis, conscious of the fact that everything they wrote was under censorship, simply said to people, don't learn from nightfall till midnight. So what would people do instead? They wouldn't have a television to watch, would they, Chas v'Shalom? So what they would do is they'd go to bed, they'd have a shluch. So they'd have a shluch, they'd wake up at midnight, and then they'll carry on learning at midnight. So the whole reason for the custom of not learning during the evening was to manipulate people in some way that they might then sleep, and then they'll be up at midnight to be learning at the same time that the Christians are at Mass in church. And that was in fact the custom of the yeshiva of the Chasam Sofer. They went to bed, they got up at midnight, and then they started learning. There are some other reasons. More mystical ones. The Gemara in Sanhedrin in Kuf Zayin, it's a censored version, says that Yishu was a pupil of Rabbi Yeshua ben Barachya. He was a knowledgeable person. But what if a person is learning Torah but doesn't match his learning with his deeds? And this is something which the Raiva talks about. Godel Halimud, the learning is very important, says the Gemara in Bava Kama Yud Zayin. Shalimud maybe Lidei Maisa, because when you learn, it brings you to do good deeds. But Oso Ish, that man, Afal Pi Shalom Ad Harbe, even though he did learn a lot, Yotzal Tabas Ra, he became a rebel and he went in bad ways. Belochein Balayla Hazeh, and therefore on that night, Tiknu Shano Lilmod Laharos Ki Limud Torah Belo Masa Eina Nechshav Meumah. So they said, don't learn as a reminder to us that if you learn and your bad deeds follow on from your learning, then that learning is worthless. Then you shouldn't learn at all. And as a reminder to that, he says, it's best not to learn. Why? So that will trigger our memory to say, this is what happens if people who do learn and go the wrong way, you might as well not learn at all. Hence the custom came about, not to learn. And this is brought in the Kedusha Siyam of the late Bob of a Rebbe, Kuf Kaftes. There's another Indian, and that is, as we spoke before, connection with Tisha B'Av. It's an idea of Avelos. It's brought from the Mordechai Moed Kotten that if a person's son goes astray from Yiddishkeit or marries out, then one sits shiva for him. Indeed, the son of Rabbeinu Gershon actually went astray, and he did this. And it's kind of sitting shiva, and one refrains from learning when one's sitting shiva. The Chidushe Harim, who was the former Ger Rebbe, he wouldn't give even a Devar Torah on Friday night when this evening fell on Shabbos. When he held the Rebbe's dish, he wouldn't give a Devar Torah. What did he do? He referred to a story about a priest who challenged Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz. Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz, he wasn't one of the Hasidish stock. And he asked Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz, how can this be that you refrain from learning Torah on this evening? Surely it is your view that learning Torah makes the world go round. And if the world can't function without Torah, how can you stop learning Torah? Answered Rabbi Yonason Eibshitz, Minag Yisrael Torahi. When there is an established custom amongst Yisrael, that is Torah. By not learning, that is Torah. And that's how we keep the world going round, by keeping to this custom. Obviously, any Tom, Dick or Harry can make up a custom. But something which is well established, which goes back for a very long period of time, we have to have great respect for it, even if we don't comply with it ourselves. And the same phrase, Minag Yisrael Torahi, was said by the Imre Emes, also a Geir Rebbe, and it's written in the name of the late Satma Rav. He spoke about the Sar Sholem of Belz, that a certain Godel had learnt on Little Nacht, and he had written Sforim. The Sar Sholem of Belz would not learn from his Sefer. And the story is told about Rav Sholem of Kamenyoka, who would not go to sleep on that evening, because whenever he went to sleep, he always dreamt Divrei Torah. And in order not to dream Divrei Torah, he stayed awake. The custom is also brought down that the Maharsha was very keen to keep to this custom. The Maharsha, who lived in the 16th century, he specially made this evening one where he did his accounts, his financial accounts, when he would work out how much Maisa money he would have to give. And he was reported by an apostate, somebody who had been Jewish and went astray and wanted to make trouble for him. And this apostate reported him to the Bishop of Ostro, that the Jews had such contempt for the Christian religion that they stopped learning that evening, that they stopped practicing their own religion in contempt for the Christian religion. So the village police decided to go round, accompanied by this bishop, to the marshal's house. And as the marshal was doing his accounts, a sefer fell off his shelf. Strange, he put the sefer back. Another sefer fell off his shelf, put it back. When it happened the third time, he felt, this is some simon. So he started learning from the sefer which fell off the shelf, and at that moment they came in and they found him learning Torah and they left him alone. I did once hear from my mother, Zichrona Livracha, that in Frankfurt they had some custom to call the day Frankfurt Purim, because there was some similar event which happened where, because it was Xmas Eve, they refrained from learning and they were playing cards around the table. This is not, by the way, a heter to say you should play cards, but they were playing cards around the table. And just before the police broke in, Svarim fell off the shelves onto the table, onto open pages, hiding the cards, and they came in and said, oh, it's okay, the Jews are learning religion on our holy night. That they wanted it, that the Jews should be also serious on this night of theirs, and not that we should be frolicking and playing games, because that would be a disrespect to them. But I haven't found any written source about this Frankfurt Purim, but it has been handed down to me.
Really, this man is there with the Yeridus Hadoros of Palatorium. There shouldn't be any fifth worry at all, because they're not even Machpid anymore.
Yeah, well, nowadays in this country the event has become so commercialised with lots of drink and so on. But on the continent in Europe it's quite a solemn day, and they only really let their hair down when it comes to the new year.
There's still Machpid to beat up Jews,
though. Yeah, well, they're Machpid, they do it the whole year round. So where does this word nittel come from? The Latin natal or natalis means born, and we have in English the words prenatal, antenatal and postnatal clinics. Natal is the relationship of birth, and we're talking about the Christian birth. There are those who suggest that it's a hint from a pasuk in Eicha, Yeshev Bodod V'Yidom Ki Notal Olov. He will sit alone and be silent because he has laid it on him, and we are therefore silent from Torah on that night. A new dimension perhaps to the carol Silent Night. But
how did it go?
And there is a safe, the Sefer Nitzei Gavriel brings down a source that because we wanted to write things in code form to avoid the censors, nittel is in fact an abbreviation for the words Nolad Yishu Tes Leteves. Yishu was born on the 9th of Teves, Rosh Teves Nittel. What's this 9th of Teves? We'll come to that in a moment. Another word nittel, another meaning of the word nittel can be relearned word nitlo, which means hung, because he was punished by the Romans by hanging, but it is wrong to suggest that the crucifixion happened at this time. It was the birth that happened at this time. It's well documented that the Jews did not kill Yeshu, because the death penalty, even though the temple was still standing, the death penalty was stopped quite many years beforehand for a number of other reasons, and the Jews never practiced crucifixion, and it's known that the Romans killed him. But coming to this business about the 9th of Teves, there's a very interesting thing which is actually brought in the Shulchan Aruch, in Aruch Haim Tav Kuf Pei, Sif Beis, which lists a number of fast days which Chazal will masaken. Many of those fast days we don't keep anymore. We have really our six fast days. And this is quoted from the Megillas Tanis. And the Megillas Tanis has a chapter on Perek Yemei Hatzomos. And it lists various fast days which were established. Like when, we know when Gedalia was killed, that's the third of Tishri and so on. But there are others like when Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Hanani ben Sharadion were killed. There are different dates which it lists. So when it comes to Teves, it says, B'shmona b'Teves nichtva atari avonis, b'mei tolmi amalech. That was the day of the Septuagint, on the 8th of Teves, when the Torah was translated into Greek. And then it says, B'tishabo, on the 9th of Teves, lo kosvi rabo seinu al mahu. Our rabbis did not write down a reason for a fast on this day. And then B'yud, on the 10th of Teves, as we know, there was the siege. We keep the 10th of Teves. But on the 9th of Teves, it says, they did not write the reason. And the same words are written by the Shulchan Aruch himself. Every single other fast day listed gives a reason. And for this particular one, it says, they would not give us a reason. Says the Perish Tosfos Chadoshim, he says, Shamati b'shem Godol Echod de'oz nolad oso ish, because that was the day that that man was born. And he adds, this was the year, in the year 3761, which corresponds in fact to 2006 years ago, when the 9th of Teves fell on the 25th of December. And the Hebrew date was the 9th of Teves. Alright, tonight is the 4th of Teves. So, but the Hebrew date then was the 9th of Teves. And so they were masakin a fast on that day. And he says in the footnotes, the reason why they did not give a public reason was they were afraid to write. They were afraid because the censors would just cross out the whole thing. So they just did it b'derech remez, with a hint. We say to people, look, there was this fast ordained on the 9th of Teves, but we're not given the reason why. And because they said, we're not given the reason why, you will understand what the reason was, to avoid the censors. Pardon? Well, you can eat at night time and not in daytime. So you might ask, why don't we keep nittel every 9th of Teves? Reason number one is given, as Yishu then follows Avodah Zorah, we use the solar calendar, and we don't give them the respect of using the Jewish calendar. Another reason is because if you make it the same day every year, then it will be conspicuous and insulting and offensive. And to fast is a more public thing. Then if you just don't learn for a few hours, they don't notice so much. But if you fast, they learn more about it, and they will feel offended by it. There was someone called Turkinus, a Greek, who was born on the 9th of Av, who killed many Jews. And the Greeks rebelled and made pogroms against Jews because they said we were fasting on his birthday. So it was felt that it wouldn't be right for us to fast on Yeshu's birthday. And there is a censored Gemara in Tanis in the 4th chapter that we should avoid fasting on Sundays, because otherwise the Christians will say that we are mourning on their Sabbath day, on their festivals. So to refrain from learning is a bit more discreet and more hidden. Rav Soloveitchik used to learn on that evening. He said, I would rather see Gehinnom from my learning on that day than to see the Shemaim of the Olam Haba for somebody who's been playing cards. The Baba Vareba, however, criticized this. Somebody said to the Baba Vareba, he said, I want to see Gehinnom for learning on that evening. So he said, look, you're not going to get Gehinnom for learning, but you could get Gehinnom for scoffing at a custom which is a Minag Yisrael. Now you might say, well, you know, I've got very good Gentile neighbours and some of my best friends are Christians, and nowadays we're living in a golden Medina where they're so nice to us with free speech and the freedom to practice our faith. And there was an interesting article once in the Jewish press in New York where Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis spoke about the priests of the church cloaked in their vestments of hypocrisy. And the Archbishop of New York wrote in a letter to the Jewish press saying that how he grew up in the Bronx in New York playing with Jewish children, and how there's always been this feeling of unity and togetherness, and he found it very offensive that Esther Jungreis should write such a thing in the newspaper, and he asked that she should formally apologize for this slur, as he called it. And as a result of that, Esther Jungreis wrote a very long article addressed to this galuch to explain to him why she can't apologize. She says, I grew up not in the Bronx, I grew up in the back streets of Hungary, where we were scared to go out on that night because they were shouting, let's go and get the killers of Joshki. She said, we were beaten up and people were even killed as a result of the Christian pogroms. And these pogroms went on for many years. We've got 2,000 years behind us, she said, how persistently the Christians were trying to say to us, adopt our faith or be killed. We know about the Spanish Inquisition, 1492. She says, there were other instances, and even when it came to the Second World War and the Nazis, she said all the Nazis were doing were picking up where the Christians had left off, because it was fashionable to be anti-Semitic. And if you should say that the church couldn't stop the extermination of the 6 million, the Pope at that time was recorded as having said that if the Jews would agree to become baptized, he would do everything he can to save them from the Nazis. And she goes through all these historical events and saying to him, look, I'm a graduate of Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. I would love to apologize, but let's work together. Let's accept each other with some mutual respect. And it's a very touching and moving article which she writes. We don't want to show ourselves to be anti-Christian in any way, but they were the biggest reform movement, number one. The Jews never went out of their way to try and convert others to Judaism. Certainly not by force, but never even by persuasion. And therefore, there is a sour history behind us which we would like to have at least some remembrance of, that it shouldn't happen again. We're going to add just another dimension to all this. We've given a number of reasons why this custom has come about, but there's another thing which we could add to it, and that is, there is something in Halacha and also in Tanakh about tricking the Sotum. Sometimes, like, we don't bake Rosh Chodesh for Rosh Chodesh Tishri. We don't blow the shofar in Rosh Hashanah. But not only there is there something about tricking the Sotum, and this might be something a bit Kabbalistic, but there's something even about feeding the Sotum. That we give the Sotum some nourishment so that he's satisfied that he's done what he could to turn us astray, and then he goes away and leaves us alone. And perhaps the classic case of this is in Megillas Rus, in the third chapter, where Naomi says to Rus, look, tonight Boaz is winnowing on the threshing floor. I want you to bathe and dress nicely. Go, don't make yourself known beforehand, but you go in when he's sleeping, uncover his feet, and just lie down at the foot of the bed. And of course Boaz gets quite a shock when he wakes up. And what is this going on here? It's something which is incredible that such a thing could happen. And the Al-Sheikh writes on this, he says, Kol Dovah Shebikdusha, wherever there is an important aspect of Kedusha, Eina Miskayim Ad Sheyehebo Ma'at Taruvos Shemichsi Ke'iso. The Kedusha, the holiness, doesn't really survive until there's something a little bit poisonous coming into it for that Kedusha to survive. Av She'eino Isur Mamash, not a proper Isur. And then he says, like Yaakov married two sisters. All right, later on it was prohibited to marry two sisters, and there are those who say it was outside Eretz Yisrael, or they would have had a din of Gerim, and not really have a din of Gerim, then they're not really sisters anymore. The intention was pure, to have 12 tribes, but the fact that he married two sisters, again, was something which could look a bit like an Isor, to give a false alarm to the Sotom. There's the story of Yehuda and Tamar. There was meant to be some sort of Yibum after Tamar's husband had died, and Yehuda was meant to perform it, and an angel told Yehuda that kings and prophets would be born as a result of a unison between him and Tamar. But he didn't know at the time that it happened that this was Tamar. And so with Rus, she was the woman, from her came the Oroshel Melech HaMoshiach Ba'olam. The whole Malchus Beis David came from Rus. The whole monarchy of the Jewish people came as a result of a very strange story. And Al-Sheikh actually writes in Rus, this is so amazing, HaMibli Ein Shadchonim B'Yisrael. He says that this whole Maisa happens, that Boaz meets Rus, and this whole thing comes about. He says, aren't there any Shadchonim in the Jewish people, that we have to have this whole thing coming about? So he says something, if you have something which is really, really sweet, you don't enjoy its taste unless there's a little bit of something else mixed into it. A little bit of sourness mixed into it. This is something very deep in Jewish philosophy, because you shouldn't now go along and say, oh well, I can now go and follow what the Satan is saying, I can do what I like. It's important that this is mixed into my Kedusha. No. We have to go according to what your Rav or your Rebbe is saying. But coming out from all this is a very mysterious concept that sometimes to put this sotan away on a false alarm, to misdirect him, something unusual is happening. Something mysterious is happening. And there is an established minhag in Klal Yisrael, a widespread custom amongst the Hasidim, amongst the followers of the Chasam Sofer, not to learn Torah on this evening. So that the sotan can then go along to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, your people, they've stopped learning Torah. The world should now stop going round. And it's written in the Sfas Emes, in Parshas Todos, that Yaakov, he did trick Esau. Alright, it was done as a trade for a plate of soup, but the guy was very hungry, he was under duress, and that the brachas of his father, of Yitzchak Avinu, were done with a sort of trickery. Says the Sfas Emes, Kivin She'ika HaRotzen Lavola Emes, because the whole idea of it was to follow what his mother was saying and to come to the truth. Einu bichlal sheker. What he did to his father was not called sheker. V'adarabba zeh tikkun ha-sheker. That sometimes the way of doing away with sheker is to plant a little bit of sheker inside it. An amazing idea. It's like a shock therapy. That those who may be on the borderlines, unfortunately there were many people from the Jewish faith who went to Christianity. There were Muranos who came to England and found that the Church of England suited them nicely because they didn't have the rituals of Catholicism. So we needed some shock therapy to implant inside us that we do something different on that evening. We might say, don't learn even at a time when you want to. And we once discussed before the idea that a minhag Yisrael can be mevatel halacha, that a minhag could sometimes even override a din. Now I'm not telling you to cancel your learning tonight, but there is an idea which we can draw from certain concepts, and I'd like to end off with one other idea, and that is this. We've just spoken about MS and Sheker. When we celebrate our Shabbos, when we celebrate our Yom Tov, it's done on the basis of facts, on the basis of Briyas Olam, of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and all the wonderful Nisim which Hashem has done for us. Every single commemoration we have in the Jewish calendar is based on a fact in our history. And I found it very interesting this week when I saw in the paper that they did a survey amongst Christians, and they found that 75% of them still believe that they should tell their children about Santa Claus, about somebody who comes down the chimney with a white beard on a reindeer to bring them the presents. 75% still believe they should tell their children this sheker. They acknowledge it's sheker. You see, when you are trying to commemorate a sheker of a so-called virgin birth and a sheker of other things, then in order to bolster it up, you have to add more sheker. You have to be Moshev Sheker ala Sheker in order to continue justifying it to your young generation. Because Sheker just falls apart. Falsehood falls. But if you keep trying to bolstering it up with more Sheker, then maybe it can hold a little bit longer. And that is the whole fundamental concept of Christianity. It's a distortion of our faith. It is a breach of our copyright. And whilst we show every love we can to our Gentile neighbours, they are guilty of fraudulent misrepresentation, where in the commercial world one could have sued them in court. And bearing that in mind, we can appreciate, whether we keep this custom or we don't keep this custom of learning or not learning on this evening, to understand the reasons behind it, to protect ourselves from anti-Semitism, to prevent ourselves from being subject to pogroms, but also to bear in mind that we can appreciate the traditions handed down to us because they are kulo MS 100%. Thank you very much.